From the Tutukaka coast in Northland, I have Genevieve Simperingham, and she with her husband Dan founded the Peaceful Parent Institute 4 years ago and run nationwide seminars on how to parent in a kind, calm and peaceful manner while maintaining strong, clear and fair boundaries for children. So, kia ora and welcome to the show, Genevieve.
Kia ora, Tim. Thanks for having me.
Genevieve, of course, we're all born into the world and we all want to be born into a family where everybody's loved, and you have this delicate little being who you bring into the world. How do we nurture them and nourish them so that they flower?
Oh, it's such a beautiful question, Tim, and it's actually the question that we need to come back to. And I think too much focus has been put on how do we make children behave and how do we make them strong and how we make them develop. But actually the question you've just asked is so healthy. It's how do we nurture them? And this is really one of the key concepts of Peaceful Parent Institute and our whole peaceful parenting model, is that the foundation of healthy relationships, the foundation of all those strong qualities that we want our children to engender, of feeling calm and settled and alert and having good social skills and high IQ, all of that we now know from 40 years of research is all directly proportional to, it's all based on the bond and that beautiful, warm, loving connection between the parent and the child. It's a big question that you ask about how to foster that, and we teach parents lots and lots of skills around fostering that bond, but also just as much so giving parents support, helping them feel understood in their day-to-day frustrations, because it's a tough job, isn't it, Tim? And I'm sure there's lots of parents listening who can really relate to what a huge responsibility it is and how frustrating it is. So, yeah, we really focus on helping the parents nurture that bond and that connection with their children and for themselves as well.
Yes, because some years ago I came to that realization that lots of parents, particularly over the last, say, 100 years, were themselves quite wounded and then brought in children into the world and doing their utmost and their best for their children, but their children, by inference and by just the child being very sensitive, noticed that, well, picked up things from their mum and dad that were not what you call whole and totally loving. So we've got to find ways for parents to not share with their children any internal psychological problems they may have.
Yes, yes. Oh, you're so right. And again, Tim, I feel like you're really getting down to the heart of the matter here. And I think I find that for lots of parents who I work with, and quite often at the beginning of a working relationship with parents, I ask them just to give me two or three pages, Tim, on just the background story of the birth and those early days with their baby and the relationship with the father or the other partner. And it just blows me away every time reading these stories, that every parent's story is, there's a lot of heartache in there and there's a lot of challenges. And a lot of parents are really very surprised and shocked up to discover what, you know, a lot of big emotions that come up for them when they become a parent. It can be really, really overwhelming. And that's when parents are really confronted with whatever is unresolved from their own childhood. And for parents who don't realize, Tim, that this is what's surfacing and that kind of big frustration and big emotions and big grief, then that's really, really difficult, because those emotions do get projected onto the child, and you know, that the child's cries is making me as a parent feel really, really angry, whereas actually the parent, the baby's cries or the two-year-old's tantrums are triggering, Tim. They're triggering some really kind of, as you say, deep woundedness within the parent relating to unmet needs from their childhood, you know, through no fault of their own or their parents. Or it really is so true that it takes a village to raise a child. And for 90 to 95% of our history, Tim, the proportion of parent-child relationship, there's been We've lived in villages, we've lived in communities, and there's been four or five parents per child. And whereas now parents are trying to survive in that nuclear family system, which is just really, really, really hard, and parents just don't have enough support. And so I really help parents to get more in touch with realizing that it is a lot of feelings from their own childhood, from other relationships in their lives that really come to the surface in their relationship with their child. And as you say, how does the parent not put those wounds onto their child? Again, it's a big and it's a deep question. And it takes a lot of awareness, a lot of mindfulness, and some skills. And something I say to parents a lot when I'm teaching is that the point of power as a parent is in that moment between where that reaction happens in the body, so the child, the baby screaming, or the older child is maybe snatched something off the baby or is trying to pull food out of the pantry or comes running into the house with their muddy boots, or, you know, a million examples of things that babies and children do every day that really frustrate a parent. And the parent, if they can see those feelings rising up inside of them and see that urge to kind of really react from that place and to just kind of say don't or stop or hey, but if they can watch that and instead become aware of their reaction, then that's their point of power, Tim, and then they've got a much higher chance of responding rather than reacting. And in doing that, they're much more likely to come into the situation with helping their child rather than just trying to control them. And in doing that, Tim, they are modeling exactly what it is that they're hoping that their children can learn to do themselves. Because really it's 95% of what we teach children, and we all know this now, Tim, it's through the modeling, isn't it? Children don't so much do what we say as what we do, much more so.
Agreed.
And yes, and how we teach them and how we respond to conflict in the family needs to be congruent with those messages, those morals that we have in the family. If we want our children to be compassionate and respectful, then we need to respond to them compassionately, respectfully, assertively but not aggressively. And we need to help them feel guided and taught rather than always controlled, threatened, punished, which just only elicits the stress response in children, which leads to frustration, which leads to negative behavior, which leads to more threats and more. And that's the stress model that parents get really easily stuck into. And as I say, it takes a lot of awareness of what the parent brings to the relationship with their child from their own childhood that really is very empowering for parents.
We in New Zealand, of course, we've come from the British model, which was use corporal punishment to make sure that you inculcate, make sure that you force your children to be obedient. And, of course, now there's so many people saying, hey, we're moving away from that model. My sister, my sister herself, she brought up her daughter who's 24 now and never hit her at all. Work to find ways to resolve, and you know, my niece is just, she's fantastic.
Oh, lovely. You're so right, Tim. We can do better, and we need to move away from teaching our children just blind obedience and blind compliance, because now, of course, there is all that awareness within our community that the children who have been taught to be very, very obedient and very, very compliant are very susceptible, aren't they? They're susceptible to being bullied and potential abuse. And so, you know, we want to engender in our children that they follow their own moral compass and integrity and strength of character and strength of integrity. And that's certainly what I want for my children. And Tim, we've brought our kids up for, and we've got a boy who's coming up to 14 and a girl who's 8. And I just feel so lucky and so blessed to have been in this model and to have had this information right from the beginning. And I want to share that with other parents. That's what I really enjoy doing, because we have been able to bring our children up right from the beginning without needing to use or even tempted to use threats or punishments or timeout or being aggressive or coercing them. We just don't need to use those sort of techniques because we've got the skills and we know that it's all about nurturing the relationship. And if we see behavior with the kids that's off track, then our attitude is, and this is what we share with parents, what's needed here. And just yesterday, there was a big day and both kids were one place or another and we collected our boy and it was 5 o'clock in the day and he got into the car and as it turns out, he's homesick today. So this was what was going on yesterday. But he got into the car and he was just immediately grumpy and his sister said something to him and he kind of snapped at her. And it just became really clear that, okay, there's tension in the air and we had all this shopping in the back and you've got the mission ahead of unloading the shopping and making dinner. And so we just talked about, okay, it's been a big weekend and we're all tired and we're all a bit grumpy and we're all a bit stressed. And, you know, what do we need for the evening to be harmonious? What's needed? And kids just have a wee think about that. And Dan said, well, I know that I'm just really weird to have everybody stretched, so I'm going to make a big effort to stay calm and to just help everybody and be extra patient because we had a big community event the day before, so the kids were always tired after that. And then the kids started talking about what they could do, and my boy said that he felt that he needed to come in and sit down and to land in an armchair and rest for a few minutes before he started helping, putting away the shopping, etc. And, you know, it all went really, really smoothly, Tim, but that's the model that we use. We can see, okay, there's stress in the air, so how do we meet and balance the needs of the family? And so the children are actually really, really great at looking after their own needs. Just the other day, Tim, my daughter came in and she said to me, Mom, I'm feeling really grumpy and my brain's all, and she kind of demonstrated this kind of, you know, my brain's all kind of chaotic, I guess. And I just said to her, what is it that you need, Aisha? And she said, I need a big glass of water and I need to lie on the grass for a while and then I want to go to bed early and get a big sleep. And, you know, isn't that just fantastic, Tim, that she's able to identify, that's real emotional intelligence, isn't it? She can identify those disruptive feelings inside and she can voice them and she can identify what she needs, as opposed to a lot of children who, if they've grown up in an environment where whenever they feel grumpy and a bit chaotic, then their behavior is always will reflect that and the parents will get grumpy with them and make them feel rejected, and then that rejection causes a lot more stress and more tension and into that negative feedback loop, that stress model. And so the children grow up to be not very good at developing what is it that I need, but instead they can be very defensive. And so I think this is what we need to give to our children, and we see this work beautifully for the families, Tim, who really take on this model and come along to seminars and do some parent coaching with me and read the books. But more than anything else, get support from other parents who are operating with a similar model of a helping mode within the family rather than just all coercion and behavior management. Yeah, so does that make sense, Tim?
It sure does. Genevieve, how did the Peaceful Parent Institute come into being?
Well, that's a good question, because even though we founded the Peaceful Parent Institute about 4 or 5 years ago, myself and Dan have actually been running groups together for the 15 years that we've been together. I've been running groups for 20 years, and it's all within the realm of personal development, self-awareness, helping adults to, take some time out to really look at their feelings and their belief systems and developing skills and tools to resolve what's been unresolved, to take greater responsibility, to release frustrations and stresses. And for me, it just became more and more clear, Tim, and that was all the adults that I worked with, of course, invariably and very quickly, it all comes back to early childhood, doesn't it? When I sit with a parent who's got relationship problems or addiction problems, and I help them explore some of the underlying reasons and feelings, then very quickly it comes back to, yes, this is how I used to feel as a kid, just like this. And whenever I was stressed at home and I got upset and my parents got upset at me, then I just used to eat. I used to want to get some food, and or I used to want to always drink fizzy drinks, or I used to always want to just play with my friends. And watching adults identify the, I guess, the consequences of not having their basic emotional needs met, sorry, as a child, and they're always the need to feel seen, the need to feel heard, the need to feel cared for, the need for somebody to really feel what they're feeling. All those basic emotional needs, when they're not being met, then they lead to a lot of problems. And so I spent many, many years through energy work and counseling and healing work, always working with adults and seeing incredibly positive results for them and their lives and with their children and their families as they resolved what was unresolved, as they started to, I guess, gain as an adult what they didn't have as a child, and they started to feel seen, feel understood, feel that somebody is feeling what they're feeling, and they started to more and more honor their feelings and honor their strengths and their weaknesses and start to accept themselves as a whole package rather than striving to be perfect or striving to prove the world they're intelligent or prove to the world that they're successful, but just getting back to those core values. And so more and more, Tim, it became clear to me, we need to help the children right from the beginning. And so I actually started running my first parenting courses about 15, 16 years ago, and they were actually really successful and lots of great results. But what I did find, Tim, was that parents invariably would ask me if I was a parent, and I wasn't, and I was young. And I could see that for them it was quite hard to really have faith in this model and these concepts, because I hadn't actually proved the theory personally in my own home. And I think that's a really fair point. And so I made that conscious decision to just shelve it until I was a parent, and came back to it later, probably about 10 years ago. Then when my son was about 3, then I started running a lot more courses more specifically designed for parents and to help them. And also I've run a lot of groups with children, helping children develop the emotional intelligence, Tim, that I was speaking about, identify the feelings in their body, kind of give images and words for those feelings. Oh, I feel like there's a volcano inside of me that just wants to erupt, or I feel more like a lion, or I feel like a scared rabbit, and helping them find imagery and words to describe their feelings, and then helping them explore ways of getting some of those feelings, which children so often refer to as poison. That's the word that they often come up with themselves. They say, I feel like I've got all this poison out of my body, which just, I think, is actually really beautiful, that they so clearly identify that the stress and the anger and the frustration and the grief was these really heavy, heavy feelings they were carrying, and they feel so much cleaner, is another word that children use a lot. I feel cleaner now they get these feelings out. And, yeah, helping them find healthy ways. So it's been a work in progress, and really I bring to my parenting work, Tim, everything that I've learned. I've just done so many different trainings and trained in so many different modalities relating to mindfulness and self-awareness and personal development and different healing modalities and shamanism. And one of the best trainings for myself and Dan was a couple of years that we spent training with some Native American earth wisdom teachers, and they taught us some tools for conflict resolution that to me have been the most advanced that I have learned, and I've read extensively and been really interested in researching different conflict resolution models. But to me, what they brought to us was just incredibly both advanced but also very down-to-earth, very, very accessible. And they taught to create a space with somebody who you've got conflict with and just working through a simple process but with a very clear protocol around expressing what happened, expressing how it made you feel, expressing what you need, expressing what you need from the other, taking time to listen and reflect and acknowledge so as each person is confident that they've been heard and understood. And a lot of it, Tim, is about just slowing down the process of conflict resolution.
Yes.
So with couples, with parents and children, and with groups, ways of sitting together as a group of people, like a family or a bigger group, and we all have different wants and needs, we all have different issues, and that training really taught me that when, again, we can slow down the process and listen to all the needs and all the perspectives, that we always can create a picture of all of those wants and needs and perspectives that actually fits together. And a lot of it is to do with bringing in an attitude and energy of how can this fit together rather than but this is what I think, but this is what I need, but this is... So this is what we do in our family. We would say sit down on a Saturday morning and we all have different wants and needs and aspirations from our day and from our weekend. And we'll just talk that through and we'll do the same if there's conflict in the family. And it just works really beautifully. Everybody listens. Everybody acknowledges. We all take time to put it together. And it just brings forward in each person the space to problem solve. And it's inspiring for adults and for children to come up with those creative solutions. And this is what we see all the time with parents who adopt this model. The parents are just blown away, Tim, at how well their children start to come up with solutions themselves. And every time that, as parents, we tell our children, well, this is what you should do, and this is the best way, and no, don't do that, and then every time, to one extent or another, we're sort of denying them the opportunity to develop their lateral thinking and develop their problem-solving skills. And I'm not saying don't do it, but there's a better way. So it's a kind of a roundabout answer to your question, Tim, because as you can see, I just bring to my parenting work lots and lots of different skills and lots of different angles. Meditation and mindfulness is a really big part of it. I've been meditating myself for 23 years now, and I've been teaching meditation for nearly as long, for about 18, 20 years. I've got 3 meditation CDs, which I share with people I work with, and just teach parents lots of different relaxation skills and different skills for managing their strong emotions.
Yes, because you did mention Native American people and indigenous peoples. I've heard so many times when a child may be upset, the mother passes the baby to the grandmother, and then the baby goes to the grandfather and the auntie and the uncle and the brother and the sister, and the baby may not ever touch the ground for days, basically, because they're in the arms of somebody else who loves them.
Yes, that's right, and that goes back to what I was saying, that up until very recently, there was 4 or 5 adults per child in each social group. And we're really compromised now not to have that. So parents need to really, really seek a lot more support, don't they? And when they have an awareness that that's what's needed, then parents can start to develop it. We had a stand at the Parent and Child Show in Auckland just the other day, and I was speaking to so many pregnant mothers. And this was probably my key message when I had the opportunity to connect in with them, was do they have enough support and develop it now? And some of them were saying, well, don't really know many other people who are parents. And I said, oh, well, now is the time to find them. Go find them. And I know this is what we did for our youngest in Ireland. And then again for our second child was we really gathered the troops around us, gathered in the tribe, because that's what's needed. And you mentioned there, Tim, about the holding and the carrying, and that's really at the heart of attachment parenting. And attachment parenting is something that is now widely used and widely understood. And it's based on this 40 years of research into the parent-child relationship, and which we've never had before. And part of that research, a lot of it, has been looking at other cultures and lots of different society groups and what works well in each group. And it really comes back to that quality of contact, the quality of connection, the quality of nurturing. We've got all the research now that shows us that the children at age 1 or 18 months or age 2, 4, 5, whose parents have been overall more or less consistently warmly responsive to them. So responding to the baby, to the child's needs, allowing the child to set the pace and the rhythm, and that those children, and also, who parents have been non-punitive, so not using punishments, that those children more or less consistently have got higher levels of coping with stressful situations, higher resilience to stress, better social skills, better problem-solving skills. Those children are more cooperative because, of course, for the parent who saves that really kind of strong word of don't do that for moments that really are a big danger, like the child is about to run out, then those children, they listen really well. But what happens a lot of the time is that parents are using that kind of level of alert for lots of little things that are happening with their baby and their child, saying, oh, don't do that, don't do this, blah, 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 do this, come away from that, I told you to leave that, I told you not to. And they're giving that sort of that stress response elicited all the time. They're getting that message of alert from the parent relating to lots of little situations that are very, very incongruent, and it's confusing for children. So, you know, going back to our research, we know now that giving the children that warm, consistent responsiveness is what develops all those social skills and the higher IQ in children. And for parents to be able to do that effectively, they need more people and they need more support.
I'm speaking with Genevieve Simperingham on the Peaceful Parent Institute and how to bring their children up so that they can be strong, caring and peaceful children. One of the things that I've noticed, particularly, I guess John Lennon helped the standard by a male bringing up their own child, and I'm constantly seeing so many men now doing such wonderful things with their children, taking the children to the playground, pushing the pram, feeding them, changing nappies, etc. There's been a huge shift in the last, say, 40 years, hasn't there?
Huge shift, yeah, a huge shift. And I was just talking about this morning with a parent. We've just had 2 weeks of filming, Tim, with a group from a TV station from South Korea who, through their research, they identified the work of the Peaceful Parent Institute as being what they consider to be the most contemporary model of parenting. And so they've come over here to New Zealand and spent a couple of weeks interviewing myself and one of my seminars, and they came to the Parent Child Show with us, and they've been interviewing a number of the parents who've been using this model. And I was just talking to one of those parents this morning about the filming that happened on Saturday, and it was one of the things she mentioned was that her husband had even a lot more to say about peaceful parenting with their 2-year-old, and they've been doing it from the beginning even than she did. And she noted that the South Korean crew, they seemed really surprised with the families that they interviewed at the high level of involvement by the fathers. And I thought, yes, that's really such a good point. And I think parents now are realizing that the mums can't do it alone, that the mother and the father need to do it. And fathers are feeling empowered to parent their children to be much more involved at the nurturing level, as well as the taking them out fishing and playing the soccer with them, which is all that essential stuff that the dads do so much better than us, if I can allow myself to generalize. Also better at the playing. There's lots and lots of things that the fathers bring to the table that are way better than most of us moms can do. And I'm sorry, because there'll be parents, there'll be mothers out there who it won't be their story, but I can say that without feeling ashamed that there's definitely Dan is better at the mucking around on the fields with the ball and all of that, and they have to pull me into it. I'm like, oh no, I have to make the dinner, but he's right there. Of course, when I do get pulled out, and I love it, and we have so much fun. But also your point there, Tim, about the fathers. Another lovely story I want to share with you is another one of the dads who was interviewed as part of this Peaceful Parenting documentary. He is a father who came to one of our seminars lately, just in the last couple of weeks. And he retold to the camera this lovely, I think it's a really beautiful story of how with his boys, he was getting to the stage where there was just more and more and more aggression. The older boy was being very aggressive with the younger child, and the father was doling out the punishments and using time out, and there was more and more need for the punishments, and the father was getting more and more judgmental of the older boy, and there was just more and more and more chaos in the family, to the point where the mother, who has a really great job that she loves, she was really thinking that she just needs to come home and rescue the father and rescue the kids. And he came to the seminar and said that really within the first half hour, he was just amazed at how everything I was saying was so incredibly relevant to him and his situation and so applicable. And he really, really got, he really bought into how he was contributing to something I demonstrated called the stress model, where the child is stressed, and that leads to their off-track behavior, which leads to more rejection and more judgment and more punishment by the parent, and then which leads to more stress and more off-track behavior, etc. And he just really got his contributing factor to that. And he said he went home that night with the toolbox, and he took out those tools the next day. And for him, the big thing has been taking that point of power between reacting and actually choosing to respond instead more positively. And what he has noticed is that his boys have been sorting out their own problems, and they've been taking responsibility more. And what he was asking them to do before, they couldn't do because he was causing them to feel so stressed because they were in threat of being put in time out. And children, and this is what we know, Tim, from brain science now, is that children who are stressed, they can't actually really access the thinking part of the brain, the prefrontal cortex. So we need to be soothing and calming our children. But the stories like that just so warm my heart so much, and I see it all the time, because now he's a dad who's enjoying, as he says, now it is a peaceful home. He's enjoying his children, and he's enjoying the opportunities that the conflict bring up. He's seeing it as an opportunity to help his kids and help his kids learn how to respond better through conflict. And just thinking ahead, Tim, to a whole generation of children being brought up in this way, what sort of a world would we have? Because really, my hugest motivation in doing this work is that I believe that it's in changing our understanding of our children and how we respond to our children and meeting their needs. That's the only way that we can solve our social problems, because the teenagers and the youth and the people in their 20s who are getting into trouble with crimes and with drugs, imagine if they could see, okay, I'm in trouble. This means I need help. This means I can seek help. This means there'll be help available to me. If they grew up with this helping model of parenting, that would be where their mind goes. They would say, I'm getting off track here. I'm getting myself in trouble. I'm not coping. I need help. But instead, it's that vicious circle, that stress model of, oh no, I've stuffed up, I've taken drugs, or I've taken alcohol, so now I'm going to get in trouble, so I can't tell my parents, so I have to hide it, So the relationship with their parents breaks down more, so they turn more to their peers, so they take more drugs or more alcohol, and the vicious circle continues. They've got no skills to resolve conflict. If their parents have responded to conflict in the home by using this communication that's shaming and blaming and punishing, that's divisive, then that's all they have in their communication toolbox, is to shame, blame, punish, to separate. So this whole model of parenting, Tim, inspires me so much, and I'm really pleased to say that worldwide it is really becoming incredibly, incredibly popular. Attachment parenting is being widely used now throughout the world, and people are really getting that it's not permissive parenting. It's totally different from permissive parenting, which unfortunately has, you know, all those same negative effects. That this really is the healthy model, and I think there's great hope for our future with more and more parents responding in this way to their children. And so really it's about healing the whole family, isn't it? And seeing the behavior in the family as being symptomatic of what needs healing and how imbalanced or how out of balance the family is and the children are. Because children, there's actually no such thing as children who are naughty or are disobedient. If we're to really, that's a myth, it's a misunderstanding. If we're to look at children's off-track behavior with more understanding, we can see that it's that the off-track behavior is symptomatic of the children being out of balance and having unmet needs. And it's this needs-based approach that really can heal our world and restore peace, harmony, and compassion and empathy to our society.
Genevieve, where do you draw your support from, and how do the authorities respond to what you are doing?
Well, where do I draw my support from? I guess I've trained with some of the people who I consider to be my heroes in the field.
Yes.
And I draw my support from them. I've just been over in Sydney just last week doing a training course with an author, psychotherapist and psychologist. His name is Robin Grill, and he's written Parenting for a Peaceful World, an amazing, amazing book, which gives us the history of childhood throughout the ages, which is a horror story, but shows us the continuum that we're on and how we're evolving. And that book is a masterpiece, and it's one of my resources. And so I'm in quite a bit of contact with Robin, and as I say, was over there last week on a four-day intensive training, and there was 14 of us women on the course, as well as Robin, the only man teaching. And all of those women are all counselors and psychotherapists and working with families. And for me, being part of groups like that really gives me so much support, because they're all other women who are working with children, working with families, working with parents, who are bringing the whole model of the understanding of psychotherapy and healing and clever and healthy communication skills into families. And so we share support. We do peer support. I mean, it's only developing with that group, but I've got other groups similar to that. Also, I've trained with a woman called Elisa Sorter, who has written 4 parenting books. And I'm a certified aware parenting instructor, certified to teach Elisa's work. And there's 65 of us instructors throughout the world. Tim, I'm the only one in New Zealand. And we have a network amongst each other. There's a newsletter. There's a group, a Facebook group. We communicate with each other by email and Skype and draw a lot of support from each other, as well as my Facebook page. There's quite a few other Facebook pages who are teaching positive discipline and peaceful parenting. And we have created a network amongst each other, and so we see each other's posts in our news feed, and we get into each other's discussions, and we share really interesting articles. There was something the other day by Eckhart Tolle and on parenting and mindfulness, and we all shared it on each other's pages. And so I draw a lot of support from really the other people in the field who are doing similar work. We've got friends just 2 miles up the road here They run a company called Nature Play New Zealand, and they work with early childhood centres, which is something I forgot to mention, Tim, but I also do offer professional development to early childhood centres, and that's something that's starting to take off more now, and that's another way of bringing it more into the everyday consciousness of more people. And so going back to Nature Play New Zealand, my friends Anna and Dino, they're operating from that similar model, and so we spend a lot of time together. Dino actually works with my husband, Dan, in running leadership training camps for teenagers through the high schools, and that's something I'm involved with as well, but the guys really drive it. And that is really, really well supported by the high schools here in Northland and by the teachers. And the teachers have been coming out to the camps and sitting with us at night around the fire in the bush, and as the talking stick is shared around, and these kids are really speaking from the heart and speaking their truth and pouring out sympathy and compassion and empathy and support for each other. And these teachers are coming out and seeing a different side to their kids and to their students, I mean, and seeing a different model of how to help these kids. So things like this, Tim, just give me huge feelings of excitement, really, about how this whole model is really starting to take off. In terms of the government, I would love to see government funding come our way. If there's any people listening who are in that area, then please contact me through my website or peacefulparent.com and talk to me about that. Yeah, we would love to see a lot more funding for what we do. But that hasn't happened yet, but I believe it will happen, because just that's where our society is moving.
Yes, this is just lovely to hear, because when you get children able to stand up and just express how they feel and other children support them, you know you're really making headway, don't you?
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. It's life-changing for these teenagers, life-changing and amazing for their families, to those who are receptive, to see these teenagers come home and just stronger in their own integrity, in their own heart, knowing their feelings better, having a better sense of their needs. And when children and teenagers, when they experience this level of this quality of respectful, like genuinely respectful communication and genuinely respectful listening and support and listening from the heart, and then it gives them an understanding of what it is that they really need to be more in balance, actually helps them have more compassion for themselves as well.
Of course, naturally, you would like to replicate your system throughout New Zealand and further.
Yes, absolutely, that's right. Yes, I want there to be lots and lots and lots of peaceful parenting advocates throughout the country, and I think it's starting to happen. There definitely is a few around. We would love to see just a lot more parent educators who come and train with us, not just for their own parenting, but to upskill on using these skills in their own community groups. And some of that was happening at the Parent and Child Show the other day, Tim. I had three or four different women who run women's groups, women's support groups and mothers groups, who talked to me about me coming and talking with their groups, but also them as leaders of the groups, just gaining more of these skills to share with their parents. So, yeah, we want to see a lot more of it, and we want to get into the schools as well to do professional development with the teachers as well as working with the teenagers. So, yeah, we need a lot of support, really. It's fundamentally myself and my husband, Dan, running the business. We've got a couple of people who help us with the administration, and we really rely on parents to help us set up the groups around the country. And places like the Prana Festival is always a great opportunity to reach lots of parents. But, yeah, we really invite that a lot more support from parents, and we're always open to kind of creating an exchange where I'm happy to do parent coaching with a parent in exchange for them giving a few hours of work to the Peaceful Parent Institute to help with getting the word out there, to help with setting up groups, to training them up and running support groups in their local areas. So, yes, hopefully there'll be people listening who are really inspired to be part of our team, and we want them to know that our minds and hearts are wide open to collaborating with other people who've got similar ideas and people who want to support us, definitely.
Very good. And tell me, Genevieve, any advice for parents at home today who are having difficulties with the behaviour of their children at this moment?
Yes, that's a great question. And, well, some little tips, first of all, really is around, I would say, more smiles. A lot of this model is, or the real power of this model, I would say, is in preventing those, getting to those places of crisis in the first place. And so when your child wakes up in the morning, rather than, come on, out of bed, we're running late, come on, come get your breakfast, instead connect with your child in just a peaceful moment of waking them up, looking at them in the eyes, just smiling at them, saying, good morning, beautiful. How was your sleep? Did you have nice dreams? How are you today? How's your heart? Just, it doesn't really matter so much what's said, but just making that connection, the parent showing the child, I'm here, I've got time for you, I care about you. Again, when the child comes back from daycare or from school, just taking those times to always reconnect. Transitions are so important and so hard for children a lot of the time. So working on those transitions, developing all of your little family traditions, little family rituals, all come to the table together, bless the food together, or whatever it is that you do to just have those little small rituals that create that feeling of security and normalcy for your children. And for the difficult behaviors, I would say to view them as your child is out of balance rather than misbehaving. It immediately brings the parents into a more heart space rather than a gripping, controlling, I have to change what you're doing, I have to stop you. You know, asking, what's driving my child's behavior? And what does my child need? And what's needed here? Then that brings about different responses, and more often than not, it will allow the parents to check in themselves their own body language, their own tone of voice. Are they adding to the stress? Are they being threatening? If they are, they're eliciting that stress response from the child. The child isn't able to think straight. So just asking parents to become much, much more aware of their stress levels in the home. And when their child's behavior is off track, if the child is having a big upset, see that the child needs help, they need support, they either need help with the problem solving or they need help in soothing those emotions. Maybe the child needs to have a big cry. I would say allow the feelings. You can say no to the behavior. No, you can't pull the food out of the pantry or go for that chocolate biscuit just before dinner, or no, you can't run out and play with your friends at 5 o'clock in the day. But yes, they're allowed to be disappointed about it, and yes, they're allowed to give their perspective, and yes, they're allowed to negotiate and tell us their perspective. So a lot more space for allowing the feelings, soothing the child when they are upset. I had a parent just a couple of days ago in a social situation who starting to work with this model, and whose child has been very, very aggressive and very aggressive towards other people and not able to hold on to friendships and lots of trouble in school. And she said to me, look at him right now, look at him. He's hitting other kids randomly and he's out of control. And tell me, what do I do? And I could see she was all fired up to go over there and charge into the situation and try and make him stop or threaten him or whatever it is. And I said, okay, look at his body language. He's not coping. He's all chaotic. He's overwhelmed. He's aggressive. His body is full of frustration he can't cope with. You need to go over there and show him that you are in control, that you're calm, you're confident, and that you're able to hold all of that energy. You're able to absorb it and be there for him. Just start to kind of wide arms, slowly bringing them in, slowly getting eye contact, speaking calmly, starting to soothe the child and say, hey, I can see that you're really fighting and that you're obviously not feeling very good. I'm here to help you. It's okay, I'm here. I'm here to help you. In this situation, the mom did it, and it just worked beautifully, and we just saw the child kind of fizzle and then kind of look a bit like he didn't know what to do, and then he starts to cry. And that was beautiful, Tim, because at that moment where the child starts to cry, they're allowing that most natural, innate, healing, stress release mechanism that we're all born with, to just to cry, to release our stress. And in that moment, he cried, he fell into his mother's arms, and they were back to peace. And so, you know, I hope the parents at home can at least get a taste of what I'm talking about, and they can go on my website, peacefulparents.com, peaceful-parents.com, and there's lots and lots of articles there that go into a lot more detail, giving these concepts, talking about sibling rivalry and conflict resolution skills for children, and talking about children's cries. And so, yeah, there's a lot of information there that can really upskill a parent. And more importantly, come along to our workshops and our seminars. We make them really accessible. We offer free talks regularly, or work with me one-on-one. If there are more tricky issues that need specific advice, then there's lots of ways that we can help. They can connect in with our Facebook page, The Way of the Peaceful Parent, to get more support with other parents.
That's lovely.
Yeah, there's some advice.
Just lovely. Wonderful, Genevieve. Very, very important what you're sharing. It's superb. I thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Tim. I've really enjoyed talking with you today and having the opportunity to reach more parents. All the best.
I want to share a little bit more of this conversation because I have another minute or so, so that you can intuitively pick up just how dedicated Genevieve really is on wanting to work with children and with parents and to bring through lovely, warm-hearted children.
It's lovely, really, that I got to talk about the Native American work and the meditation and mindfulness and that, because that's not the kind of stuff that I can bring in. I don't really want to bring it into the mainstream media because it is such a new model, crazily enough, but it is such a new model, and it brings up a lot of strong reaction in kind of more conservative and mainstream people, then they want to write it off. You know, they want to write it off as being kind of airy-fairy, hippie nonsense. So I'm trying to keep it to, within the mainstream, I'm trying to keep it to the just the basic communication skills.
Agreed.
The relationship stuff. And so it's lovely to have a forum like this where I can give a bit of a broader perspective to it.
So true, yes. It's interesting because, as you say, conservative beings, I see the war of love of today is between those who want to know and want to do something about positive change versus those who don't want to know anything and refuse to do anything at all.
Yeah.
And so when you've got these forces, we've got to work in endeavouring to be able to excite and cajole people to just take that next best step.
Yeah.
And so that's where we're at the moment.
Yeah. Now, Adam, it's always the way at the end of anything that you think, oh, gosh, I didn't really explain this or the other. I'm hoping that I got across that, you know, that children's behavior just becomes so much more healthy when this model is used. And I don't know if I really, I hope I got that across. Do you feel I got that across?
Yeah, I feel so. I feel so. Even a baby crying into his mother's arms, in the end, basically, the baby or the child released himself from all this, and he realized there was a safe place to go.
Yeah.
And I think, and so that when they know that there's a safe place to know that, somebody loves me. So love is basically is a nest that captures them. And of course, the other side of it is that when tears flow, they streak down your cheeks. You can feel it cutting away the grime of all the frustrations or hurt or whatever.
Yes, I am glad that I got to make that point about the tears being our natural innate stress release mechanism, because I think that's one of the big myths, is that parents get angry at their children for crying, and whereas actually when the child is crying, the child is attempting to heal. They're actually releasing their stress, and it's one of the big misunderstandings. And And it's a simple one for parents to get when it's mentioned. They go, oh, yes, of course, yeah. They are releasing their stress, and then they get better at allowing and listening to those cries. And so they're allowing their children to come back to balance. And that's what's amazing, is that children can come back to balance so easily if parents can just support them rather than getting angry at them.
Yes. That was Genevieve Simperingham, the founder of the Peaceful Parent Institute, talking on maintaining strong, clear and fair boundaries with children, and her website is peaceful-parent.com. peaceful-parent.com. At 9:05 a.m. on Thursday, this program is streamed from the Planet FM studios on planetaudio.org.nz, search green, or iPod, and streaming can be obtained 6 hours after broadcasting on greenplanetfm.com, holisticliving.co.nz, and itunes.com, search health. Thank you for tuning in to this Green Planet radio show. I trust you have derived both enjoyment and insight as we empower ourselves with a greater understanding of a magnificent, multifaceted world that we inhabit. In these coming times of rapid change, it is going to take raw courage and inner resolve. So I thank you as we all remain both focused yet relaxed as we challenge the status quo and let go of the old as we fervently co-create the new paradigm. So that every conversation we have, every email we send, every phone call we make,